This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today.
We're doing things a little differently this episode, given what's happening in the world today. And that includes recording outside our usual studio environment. You may find the audio is a little lo-fi, but we hope you enjoy it anyway. So, it's actually happened. We have all been grounded. Like thousands of other people, my travel plans? Smashed. Instead of heading off for a couple of months of new adventures, I put my suitcase away and am coming to terms with the fact the only view I'll be enjoying anytime soon is the one outside my window. The amazing thing is how quickly it's happened. Just a few weeks ago, it felt so different. I was off an assignment, reveling in the joy of half-empty planes and well-chosen annual travel insurance. But now, everything has changed. And as we adjust to the realities of life in a time of pandemic, some people are wondering whether travel will ever be the same again. Hello, and welcome to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. I'm Uta Juncker, and today we're tackling one big question. Is this the end of travel as we know it? And because social distancing and self-isolation are the new normal, we're doing this a little differently to how we usually would. I'm actually holed up in my own home while my guests are joining me down the line. Sitting safely somewhere else in town is a Flight of Fancy regular, a dedicated traveller who doesn't go to pieces in the face of crisis or catastrophe. Sue Williams, hello.
Hi, Uta.
Good to have you along. And in another room entirely, we have a man who has made it through more than one travel crisis and lived to tell the tale. Intrepid Travel co-founder Jeff Manchester. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks, Uta. Great to be here with you.
Oh, look at that. We have the technology. We can make this work. So, Jeff, we keep being told that this is an unprecedented situation. And it's true. We've never had Australians told not to travel anywhere before. But travellers and the travel industry, we've weathered plenty of storms before, haven't we?
Most certainly. During the 2000s, we just seemed to have one impactful event after another. Now, we had 9/11, and then we had SARS, and then we had regular terrorist incidents all around the world, and then we had the global financial crisis. It just seemed to go on and on.
And we had my personal favourite was the ash cloud. Remember when that Icelandic volcano erupted and this ash cloud hovered and then it went away and then it came back and it was like the return of the ash cloud.
Yes, and the ash cloud was probably very responsible for creating one of the most the worst over-tourism incidents in the world, which is everyone wanting to go to Iceland.
Jeff, what's the link between those two?
Oh, because the ash cloud seemed to put Iceland on the map and suddenly everyone was wanting to go to Iceland.
Okay, but so what happened? Did the travel industry just learn to roll with the punches? Did people get back into the spirit of travelling once the danger was gone?
Yeah, the travel industry really became very resilient. Any organisations that weren't able to manage themselves in a way to survive things went out of business, and the ones that survived became resilient companies.
So the travel industry has learned to bounce back, but as travellers, it can be really scary sometimes. I think one of the things at the moment is not just this sense of doors slamming shut around the world, but there's so much information and so much misinformation floating around. Now, that's really frustrating, but it could be worse. I mean, Sue, you had a very different experience of not having
any information at all in a time of crisis way back in the 80s in Africa, didn't you?
That's right. I was in Uganda in the early 80s when the disease SLIM was first being recognised, which obviously was later HIV/AIDS. Nobody really knew what was happening. Lots of local people were kind of losing weight terribly, and there were lots of deaths, but people just didn't really know. And I think that kind of made people really quite scared, this not knowing. But then now we have too much knowledge in lots of ways. And I think it makes us much more pessimistic and much more alarmed and hysterical. So it's kind of interesting to see the difference in the amount of information, because it's so easy, I think, to get absolutely hooked on coronavirus stories. You know, I can't resist keep looking up on the latest state to close its borders, or the latest country, or the latest thing. And that's a really dangerous thing, I think. Sometimes we just have to withdraw and just reset.
And I guess we're lucky that those of us who are at home or who have recently returned home, at least there's a feeling that, you know, you're in the place you know best. And okay, at the moment, we're going nowhere fast, but that will change. Sooner or later, we will start traveling again. And then the question is, what's that going to be like? I mean, Jeff, do you think that when the travel bans are lifted and when everyone's going, okay, business as usual, are Australians going to be a bit hesitant to go traveling again, or are they going to leap right in there?
I think Australians will leap in there more quickly than anyone else other than the New Zealanders. And it'll take about 3 months after I'm not sure if there'll be an official end to the coronavirus, but after, you know, when everyone's feeling comfortable that it's finished, it'll take about 3 months, and then people will be out there travelling again.
So you're saying 3 months quite accurately. That's kind of, you've seen this as a pattern?
After single incidents, like something like 9/11, it will take 3 months for the market to get back to normal. For something like this, it's a little bit different, because there's not really a defined finishing point. But once things start getting back to normal, people start thinking about travel. And there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand, because travel is just part of people's lives. And so people will just start planning their travel fairly quickly. And especially as they have been sitting around getting bored at home.
And as well, lots of people have actually paid for flights that they've had to postpone, and some of those flights now have to be booked before, say, December. So that will be an added impetus to get our flights ready before we lose the money, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, there is that economic driver. You're right, in terms of offers that we need to take up where we've already put our money on hold. And also, of course, what we tend to see after these incidents is travel companies are keen to get us travelling again so we can get quite good prices too.
Oh, yeah. There are lots of deals already coming out, and they're kind of saying plan your travel for July, or plan for August, or plan for September. And lots of them are kind of saying, look, much cheaper prices now. So really start thinking of the future now. And if you pay now, you can lock in these really cheap prices. And I imagine some people are actually doing that. I think it sort of divides us into optimists and pessimists. The optimists probably say, yes, I'm going to go to, you know, Africa, or I'm going to Europe in September. And the pessimists say, well, I'm going to think about December maybe.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good point. And then the question is, when we start traveling, where are we going to go? And my top tip is, I'm going to say Bali, because you know what? Even bombings don't keep us away. Bali's like our boyfriend who we just can't stay away from, and we just keep coming back from. But where else do you think that is going to be feeling the love from travellers?
I think Bali, you're right, but I think all of Southeast Asia for Australians will be a place, because they feel very comfortable in Southeast Asia, but also any other English-speaking country, people will immediately start travelling back to.
And maybe people will start going to places a bit closer to us as well, places like the Cook Islands and Vanuatu and Fiji and French Polynesia, because, you know, we kind of still see them as relatively unspoilt and not urbanised, and not too many people there as well. So they kind of feel quite safe destinations for us. And, you know, it doesn't take too long to get there by plane.
It's interesting to wonder how what's happening now is going to affect the reputations of destinations, because we've seen this in the past where something bad happens in a destination, and some countries find it really difficult to shake off, and other countries just sort of seem to pick up and run. So, you know, the two places that at the moment we've heard the most about with coronavirus is China and Italy. How are Australian travellers going to feel about going back to those countries, do you think?
So I think with China, they might actually have an advantage in that China's already getting over it. And so people will get the feeling that, oh, yeah, it's going to be safe to go back to China before anywhere else in the world. So that might benefit them to a certain extent. And I think with Italy, people just love Italy so much, so they'll just ignore it to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff on Italy, because I think we just love Italy so much. It's just such the opposite of Australia. We kind of really, we're going to go there, whatever, really. A friend of mine has just gone there for a year. She just left 2 weeks ago, and she's been emailing, and it's kind of a difficult experience at the moment because she doesn't know anyone, and she's staying in a rented apartment, kind of almost a prisoner in the place. And I think it's quite lonely, but she's not even thinking of coming back. This is her time in Italy. She's always dreamed of being in Italy, and she's going to stay there.
I was going to say she's going to stay there until she actually gets to talk to someone.
That's right. Well, she doesn't speak any Italian either, so who knows? But I'm not so sure with China, because I think one of the drivers about going to China is always the food. The food is, you know, quite magnificent. Mm. And I wonder if people are going to be still a little bit nervous about the food in some ways, because, you know, it was the wet seafood markets where coronavirus perhaps is believed to have started. Maybe people will still be a little bit nervous about the food. I'm not sure. But then again, we do have a big appetite for black tourism, for danger tourism. You know, we kind of, in Cambodia, we love going to see the killing fields. And in Russia, I mean, Chernobyl's having a big rush going to see Chernobyl, really. And here in Australia, after the killing of Peter Falconio, lots of people were going on road trips around the Northern Territory and going to where Peter was killed and Joanne Lees was imprisoned for a while. And just to see the sights. So you never really know.
You never know with Australians, they'll go have a look at anything.
Yeah, that's right.
But it is true. We are fairly adventurous travellers. I mean, Jeff, you named your company Intrepid for a reason, didn't you?
Oh, that's right. And I think there's probably historical context for that, in that, you know, one or two generations ago, travel was about going back to the old country. But then in the 60s and 70s, backpacking became, you know, a really big thing. And it still is, but it's just meant that people have traveled in a way that is a bit more, I guess, real, but a bit more risky. And so they're used to living or traveling with perhaps a slightly higher degree of risk than perhaps the majority of people from other countries, and so they're happy to continue on taking a little bit more risk.
Well, I think it's the fact that for so many of us, our early travel experiences are in, as you said, Jeff, Southeast Asia. It's such a place we love, and that is your first trip to Southeast Asia is such a culture shock. And once you've sort of dealt with that, you kind of excited about experiencing something totally different, right?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely right. Because in Southeast Asia, things do go wrong. But that's half the joy of travel. And the day after something goes really wrong, or a few hours, something just amazingly good will happen to you.
And Sue, I mean, you're a boundary pusher from way back. I mean, you're constantly crawling around Africa or South America or somewhere equally exotic. Have you noticed that sense of adventure with your fellow Australians when you're in these destinations?
Absolutely. It's interesting when you travel with Australians as against Americans. Americans tend to be a little bit more nervous and a bit tentative about many aspects of travel. But Australians, we kind of just get on with it. And I think, you know, the best travel stories are when things go wrong. People don't want to hear so much about fabulous trips where everything went smoothly and beautifully and everything was wonderful. They kind of want to hear when you're a little bit fallible. And I think that's what those are the stories that we really like as Australians. We don't want everything to go wrong, obviously. But, you know, just a little glitch here and there and overcoming the odds is what kind of sparks our sense of adventure.
I think there's going to be a whole swathe of travellers who have some great coronavirus stories to tell after the events of the last few weeks. And of course, one of them is our very own Ben Groundwater. So Ben was in Italy with his family when the coronavirus struck, and he made it out of there. He's obediently self-isolating at home, but since we have the technology, we've invited him to join us too. Ben, can you read me?
Uta, I can read you. Isn't this interesting? I was originally going to be the guy calling into the studio from isolation, and now we're all kind of in isolation.
But we're all still connected. It's a beautiful thing.
We are. And as a friend of mine said very recently, now is the time we should all be reaching out to each other from our isolation and communicating and connecting, which I think is a lovely sentiment.
Virtual group hug, guys. Isn't it beautiful? Okay, so Ben, I mean, you were in Italy when it kind of became the epicenter of coronavirus. How did that feel to be there as that unfolded?
It was stunning, really, in so many ways, mostly in that this thing always seemed like something that was happening somewhere else. You know, for a while it was happening in China and it was a thing that was happening over there. And then we were in Rome and it was a thing that was happening in northern Italy, but it wasn't really happening anywhere outside of Lombardy. And then all of a sudden it was something that was happening in Emilia-Romagna as well. And I saw someone wrote a piece talking about like this feeling of an encroaching army, you know, coming to invade. And there was sort of that feeling in Rome, like, you know, this thing is coming for us and there's not a whole lot we can do. And so, you know, for such a long time, Romans were very blasé about the whole thing, as we were as well, kind of thinking that this is not a thing we have to worry about just yet. Maybe we'll give it a week, we'll give it 2 weeks and we'll think about it. 10 days ago from when I'm talking now, we had some friends come to stay with us in Rome thinking that they were in for a normal holiday. 10 days ago, I'm now in isolation in Sydney. They've now gone home to Spain. You know, things have changed so much in that short period of time. And to me, that was the most stunning thing, was just how quickly things changed. It really, really took us by surprise, and I think has taken the whole world by surprise.
So Rome was for you a stop on a gentle trip home back to Australia, because of course you're traveling with an 18-month-old, you don't want to rush it. At what point did you start to think about, maybe we should change our plans?
Yeah, so we were in Rome for 5 weeks, and once things started picking up a little bit in Lombardy, I think when it got to about 2,000 cases and the Australian government changed their advice to reconsider your need to travel to the north of Italy, whereas the south where we were was still green for so long. And so we were just thinking, you know, we'll ride this thing out in Rome the same way the Romans do, which is just to keep on going and live your life and enjoy yourself and not worry too much. It was only really, you know, once things started to move through Emilia-Romagna and through Tuscany that we thought, well, maybe we should get out of here a little bit early because it's probably not going to be that much fun here. And so we changed our flights to about 4 days earlier. And we were very lucky that we did that because that turned out to be the last Singapore Airlines flight out of Rome. Everything else was cancelled after that. You know, that's just the way it went, which we had no idea of at the time. But you know, once all the attractions closed, all the galleries and museums, all the monuments all closed, that was obviously a sign. And then all of a sudden, all the restaurants and bars closed and everything closed. And obviously, at that point, it was time to get out as quickly as possible.
And what was the trip home like? I mean, I was traveling a little bit and I was loving the half-empty planes because I was kind of like, oh, yeah, there's no problem here. I'll be fine. Was it more anxious when you're heading home and, you, as you're saying, you've watched this invisible army heading towards you, where you're kind of like, oh, my God, grab my child and flee, make this plane fly faster? Or were you calmer than that?
it felt a bit like that. It was a flight like none I've ever been on before in my life. You know, it was a flight full of non-Italians. Italians weren't allowed to leave the country at that point. They were in full lockdown. So it was only foreigners, and there was very much a feeling of fleeing danger. And you know, we were trying to remain calm and just go about our business as usual. But so many people on the flight were dressed in, you know, full disposable hazmat suits with dust masks, because no one could find any surgical masks. They were all gone from the pharmacy. So people were wearing like workers' dust masks and big plastic goggles. There was a family who just took up three seats and draped a huge sheet over the top of themselves and didn't come out for the entire flight. Everybody was wearing gloves, and you know, it was a really disconcerting experience and a frightening experience, and we were just so pleased to be able to get off at the other end. One thing I would say, though, the crew on board our flight were incredible. They were just sort of smiled and were absolute professionals and got on with the job. And that was a really nice calming influence for everyone on board, I think.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Even when you're dedicated to being calm and being reasonable, and you see these other people kitted up and you're just going, have I got this all wrong?
Yeah, I mean, and particularly as, you know, we were flying out of Rome, and at that point there was no ban on southern Italian travellers coming into Singapore, but there was a ban on people from northern Italy. But that, you know, no one gets stamped going into northern Italy, so it's basically working on a trust basis. You have to assume that these people are being truthful and haven't been in northern Italy, where there was a serious breakout. And so you're sharing the plane with all of these hundreds of people that you don't know, and we've got an 18-month-old who can't stay in one spot for more than 5 minutes, and he wants to charge up and down the aisles and touch everyone and high five people and everything, and so we're trying to corral him and stop him from moving as much as possible, but you just can't do that in a really effective way. So there was that extra pressure and stress on us as well.
So that was a pretty exhausting trip.
It was, absolutely. I do like Singapore, but I've never been happier to arrive there, I can tell you.
So tell me this, Ben, having gone through all of that, do you think it's going to change anything about the way you travel in future?
I don't know. I mean, in some ways, you know, we feel a bit like a friend of mine had a perfect analogy. She feels a bit, she's just come back from Italy as well, and she says she feels a bit like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. You know, she's seen what's going to happen, but no one believes her at this point in Australia. And so I think, you know, maybe it won't in Australia. Maybe everything's okay. But for us, I think the big difference is just going to be a little bit more aware of our situation and how quickly things can change. I consider myself a reasonably cautious traveler. We'd sort of taken into account the statistics and the you know, tried to take the panic out of things and thought our actual chances of contracting this are actually very, very slim in Rome. And, you know, we need to just think logically about this. But it just moved so swiftly, and governments moved so swiftly, and bans came in so swiftly, and flights were cancelled so swiftly. All of that kind of stuff we didn't really take into account, I think. So I guess that will play into my thinking more in future. If something like this happens again, which, you know, I really, really hope it never does.
Yeah, it was like that, if anyone remembers the opening credits from the Get Smart series, where all those doors shut one after the other, you know, and it's kind of like everything is slamming shut and you kind of go, okay then. But so do you think, Ben, that if anything should happen when you're traveling, you're going to be trying to read the future a bit more carefully?
I don't think so. I think this is a unique situation, and I don't think anything like this is likely to happen again. I've always traveled fairly fearlessly, but in a sort of rational way. And I think I would very much like to do that. You know, you guys were talking about where you'd like to travel to once this dies down. And certainly for me, I would love to get right back to Italy as soon as possible, because as we were saying, it's an amazing country. It's a beautiful country. And having been there and seeing with my own eyes people who were just being hit so hard by this and struggling so much, I would love to get back there and support the businesses that are struggling there. So in a way, you know, I don't think this will affect me in the long term. It might make me slightly more cautious and more wary of how governments can move and how that can affect travellers. But the actual sort of going to places and doing things and enjoying myself, I don't think that will change.
Oh, Ben, I love that. You escaped Italy by the skin of your teeth and you're champing to go back already. You're a travel hero. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys. Great to chat.
And Sue, I mean, you had your own experience traveling in the early days of coronavirus, didn't you?
Yes, I've just come back from India. And that was kind of interesting because I probably went into India about 3 weeks ago. And even then, everybody at the airport was being tested for their temperature, every single person. So it took ages to get into the country because, you know, it was a huge crush of people. But when we got into the country, in lots of hotels as well, they were testing us before we were allowed into the hotel. They were checking our temperature. And there were armed guards there to stop anybody whose temperature was a little bit high. And there were some people who had bookings at the hotel who weren't allowed in when their temperature was too high. So I was surprised when I came back to Australia, assuming that by then, so that this was just a week ago, assuming by then that we'd all be tested as we came back into Australia to make sure our temperatures were okay. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing. I was amazed. I guess, you know, I think we have been a little bit smug about this up till now, and I think we're becoming a bit more wary just now. But I think back then we just didn't really ever think much would happen to us, just as Ben has said.
Look, I think it's the thing that you learn and adapt. And I mean, for anyone who's done any travel at all recently, especially in sort of less developed countries, you're used to when you go into a nice hotel or even at the airport, you know, checking of the vehicles, mirrors underneath the van, sometimes checking in the back. And that's just something that happens now. Well, even security lines at airports, right? Before 9/11, we didn't have that. These days we accept it. And I was in Singapore a couple of weeks ago and they were totally calm. But every time you went into an office for a meeting, someone would check your temperature. And it was just routine because they'd been through SARS and they went, this is what we do in this situation. So I think, gosh, let's hope it doesn't happen. But should something like this happen again, at least everyone will know, okay, here's the drill. You know, this is what we do in this situation.
And they'd be accepting of it too. And it's kind of funny because you can't go into these situations and you have little rules for yourself. Like on the plane, I had a mask and I thought, shall I put the mask on or not? And I thought, well, if the air stewards are wearing masks, I'll put mine on. But I got on the plane and half of them were and half of them weren't.
So you didn't. Put it half on?
So I put it on my head. No, I didn't put it on at all because they are incredibly uncomfortable. And some people had them on for like 23 hours. I don't know how they managed, really.
So, okay, here's a question. Jeff, tell me what you think. I mean, even before the coronavirus, as travellers, we were starting to change the way we travel, as we always do. You know, I think these days we think more about the impact our travels have, and perhaps we're just a little bit more tentative about the world in general. It feels perhaps a more uncertain place than it did, say, 10, 15 years ago. How do you think coronavirus is going to, our experience of that is going to affect existing travel trends?
Oh, look, I think one of the big changes will people are going to be much more interested in travelling domestically. And, you know, and here in Australia, we've just got so much scope for doing amazing things that people will be out at the moment looking at those things. And I think we'll just see opportunities to do really interesting things in Australia will grow because there'll be more demand.
Sue, what do you reckon?
I think that's very true. It's difficult at the moment because some friends have been saying, well, I'm going to spend some time in Australia now. I'm going to go up to Queensland. I'm going to go down to Tassie. I'm going to go to the Northern Territory. And in fact, some of those borders are now being sealed or people are talking about sealing those borders. So maybe those of us in New South Wales will stay there. Those of us in Victoria will be exploring the remote areas of Victoria for a while. But then afterwards, when this is all over, yeah, I think we will be much more interested in local travel. And I think probably after all this self-isolation, we might be even more interested in multi-generational travel. I mean, that's been a big travel movement for a while. But because we're being separated from our elderly relatives for a bit longer, maybe we're kind of much more about togetherness now and we'll appreciate friends and family and time with them and precious time travelling with them. Maybe that will be much keener on that as well.
Oh, I like that idea. And I also wonder if, because I'm an incurable optimist, you know, in the same way that we saw after the bushfires, that people were thinking about, well, where can I spend my money that will help? And look, I'm going to buy from this baker because this baker has been impacted. And whether we're going to extend that a bit more around the world and we're going to want to go and help small businesses. Like I know when Ben goes back to Italy, he's going to be going to every small trattoria he can find and paying them good money to feed his insatiable appetite. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But, yeah, I wonder whether we're going to look for a bit more connection, not just with the people we're travelling with, but the people in the places we are travelling to.
Yeah, that's right. I guess globalisation is becoming a bit of an issue now because We can't use the big call centres that we've been having in the Philippines because they've been closed down. So maybe we're going to become a little bit more self-reliant. And then when we go to places like Italy, we are going to seek out those very small grocers, and we're going to, the small businesses, and we're going to be looking at ethical businesses as well, and kind of greener businesses in those kind of ways.
And all also, right. I was going to say, Uta, it could be that this really has an impact on over-tourism, in that people will be a bit more cautious about going to places where there are huge crowds of people, and they start looking at alternatives. So, you know, instead of automatically going to Venice if they're going to Italy, that they think, oh, no, perhaps I don't want to go there, and I'll go down to the south of Italy where there's fewer people.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, isn't it, that if we've all been social distancing diligently for months on end, that the idea of plunging into a great big global city heaving with people is suddenly somehow slightly less appealing.
Another thing which a friend of mine pointed out, she's just booked flights for a big trip and now is trying to cancel everything and get her money back. And she started saying, well, instead of booking up all my travel on my own in future, I'm always going to start going back to agencies and travel companies, because then you're just dealing with one body, and if anything goes wrong, they're the people who are looking after getting your money back. And so I think, you know, travel agencies and travel companies are doing it hard at this period, but maybe when this is all over, we'll start going back to them in a much bigger way, which is probably good news for you, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, it is good news, Justin, and I fully support that. And, you know, your travel agents support us really well, and we try and support them. But if we go back to the volcano in Iceland, people who booked through a travel agent got out or got to travel because they would fix it for them, whereas people who booked online, they didn't have someone to do it for them, they couldn't get through.
So there are upsides to this experience. Anything else that you think might be good? I mean, Jeff, you already mentioned that it could be good for the domestic tourism industry.
Yeah, good for the domestic tourism industry. But I think it could be good for the industry overall, in that governments might actually acknowledge how important tourism is, because tourism is a very fragmented industry and it's a very high employing industry. Like, it's something, in some countries it's 11% of all employment is in tourism. In Australia it's probably a little bit less than that, but it doesn't have the power that other industries have, and I think this might just enforce politicians to listen to the tourism industry as a whole a little bit more.
And also, I think that this crisis has made us realise how precious life is, and has made us all kind of appreciate the fact that life is short and we've got to do as much as we can while we're here on Earth. So I think people might start actioning their bucket list much sooner, you know, rather than waiting for much, much later. But we'll all start doing really big trips to really those kind of exotic destinations that we've always wanted to go to. And I wonder if we'll be doing a bit more of that as well.
We probably will, Sue. Although, Uta, there's one group that this might be might travel less following this, is people who are retired and, you know, have a fixed income, because they're, you know, with the downturn in the stock markets and the Australian dollar losing such incredible value even today, they're going to be looking at how much money they have to spend. So hopefully that's only a relatively short-term issue, but I'm sure it will be for the next 12 months.
But, yeah, hopefully after that they'll be able to pick up some growth again and be heading out again. So what about the two of you? Where are you guys planning to go once those travel bans are lifted? Sue, do you have plans already?
Well, I was actually meant to be in Ethiopia at the moment. So hopefully I'd like to go back to Ethiopia as soon as this is all over. And then I'm hoping to go on a trip with Jeff. Well, not actually with Jeff, but with his company.
I was about to say, oh, hot gossip.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, what is it? So I can arrange to come.
Well, that was a trip I was planning before, which has been cancelled, unfortunately, and that's to three of the stands, to Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. So I'm looking forward to that, and that's always been a bucket list destination for me.
Ah, so that's moved to the top of your list. And Jeff, what about you?
Well, you know how you always have, no matter how much travel you do, there's always one or two countries that you miss out that people think, gee, surely you've been there. And one of those countries for me is Jordan. And I was meant to be heading to Jordan in a week's time for a cycling trip, on one of our cycling trips. And it was actually a fundraiser for the Intrepid Foundation. And we've had people, you know, paying to go on the trip and also going and doing fundraising. So that's been delayed, and that's looking like it'll run at the end of September. So I've got my fingers crossed that the coronavirus will be under control by then, and we'll be able to start travelling at that time. But meanwhile, I've got to keep cycling for another good few months to make sure that I stay fit.
I'm not sure whether to count that as a downside or an upside of the coronavirus, Jeff.
And where are you going, Uta?
Oh, do you know, I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that, because I've had 4 months' work of travel cancelled and I just don't know where to start. But I'll tell you what else I'm worrying about, which is very first world problems. I think by the time we get to start cancelling again, I'm going to have already streamed everything that's on the in-flight entertainment. So what am I going to watch on the plane?
I think that will be the least of your problems.
We hope so. But listen, I love the fact that you're both already looking to the future, because, you know, one thing's for sure, we don't know when we're going to be able to travel again, but blimey, we're going to get out there and do it when we can. So Sue, Jeff, thanks both so much for dialing in.
Great pleasure. Thanks, Uta.
Thanks, Uta.
And thank you for listening. If you want to keep armchair travelling as you keep up your social distancing, then head to traveller.com.au for plenty of inspiration. And of course, there are loads of episodes of Flight of Fancy to get you dreaming and planning as well. You can even subscribe if you like. So thanks for joining us. Keep dreaming of new destinations. And we'll catch you next time on Flight of Fancy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Flight of Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. Our guest host is Uta Juncker. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by Lap Fam. Extra audio assistance by Dave McMillan and Leah Samoglu. And our digital editor at traveller.com.au is Craig Platt.